Welcome back to another episode of Uncle Takes. We're your hosts, Monica and Tank. And today we're talking about The Happening, which is a 2008 movie. It's a thriller sci-fi, directed, written, and produced by M. Night Shyamalan. It stars Mark Wahlberg, Zooey Deschanel, John Leguizamo, Ashlyn Sanchez, Frank Collison, Victoria Clark, Spencer Breslin, Robert Bailey Jr., Betty Buckley, Jeremy Strong, and even M. Night Shyamalan is credited. He plays a non-important character. I mean, none of these characters, do they have names? Like, they never really refer to each other by name outside of, like, the first 10 minutes. I mean, they're just like,
the wife
okay.
is Alma, I think?
Yeah, you're Alma, you're Elliot, and you're Julian, and you're Jess. And then outside of that, like, nobody's name fucking matters. I mean, not even therefore, but
yeah. I mean, I don't. I mean, they don't. I guess they don't use names that often. But I think it was Alma and Elliot.
Yeah. But I think that's all the characters. I mean, there's a whole lot of extras in this movie, and they play more of a role than they should. There's also a train conductor at some point. Yeah. Anyway, the summary of this movie is that after New York City civilians start killing themselves in gruesome ways in public, school lets out early for Philadelphian teachers Elliot and Julian, who proceed to head for the hills to avoid supposed terrorist attacks. Eventually, we learn that these neurotoxin attacks are coming from the plants, which makes every tree a suspect. The team proceeds to try and outrun the wind, which is working with the trees to kill humans because humans are ruining the planet. Elliot and Alma, despite some relationship struggles, managed to survive the attacks, likely because they were loaded up on high-protein hot dogs.
Yep. That sums it up.
I mean, I don't think I could have made a dumber summary, but I, you know, it's just, this movie, let's get into it. Did you want to start before this movie, or like somewhere in the middle? Where is M. Night Shyamalan in his career trajectory at this point? I think is where we should start. Like,
well, this is 2008.
Yes, and Sixth Sense is 2000. So this is like a few movies after Sixth Sense, and this is definitely his downhill trajectory, right?
Well, yeah, Lady in the Water was not well received. So
I saw that. I've never seen that, though.
It was Lady in the Water, The Happening, Last Airbender, and then After Earth. Is like a 10-year period that's sort of his down period.
Okay.
Because he started off with The Sixth Sense, Unbreakable, Signs, The Village. Which are all like various degrees of at least well-regarded. Obviously, The Sixth Sense is, you know, considered a, you know, a real smash. And then, you know, Signs, you know, and Unbreakable, I think, are both considered good. The Village, I think, has some detractors, but it's thought to be, like, at least an interesting movie.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, I think The Visit and Split are both considered pretty good. Glass and Old, I think Glass was not super well received, although it seems like Bruce Willis had some health issues at that point, so his inability to really be in it was an issue. And then Knock at the Cabin and Trap, I think, is sort of mixed. So this is in the middle of his down period.
Okay.
But I think he still had a lot of cachet, right? He was still the Sixth Sense guy.
Yeah, he still had clout at this point.
Yeah.
Which I think made people go see this. And I didn't see this back in the day. I think as soon as I got like 20 minutes in, I remembered that I had heard about this movie. I was like, oh shit, I think I know what happens in this movie. Because like, as they're trying to figure shit out, I'm like having revelations, being like, this sounds eerily familiar. I think I remember people talking about this movie.
Yeah, so this is like a memed movie. Right? Like, you know, Mark Wahlberg is he's a science teacher. He's not a scientist, but yeah, he's a science teacher, right? Because the other guy's the math teacher.
Yeah.
And he's you know, they have to outrun the wind. So this is like a movie people have made fun of a lot. That said, all that stuff is not really the stuff that I thought was like bonkers with this movie. You know, like that stuff's weird, but you could have still made a movie like with those, like if you made those stipulations, you could still make a movie, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
And what they did was like just so weird.
Well, let's kick it off in that case. Yeah. So this opening scene in the park, they're playing this weird like Scooby-Doo music throughout the movie. Like the score is fucking terrible. But my question was, she recognizes people are like clawing at their face in really grotesque ways, which we don't see. But why isn't that girl affected in this initial attack in Central Park?
Yeah, so there's two girls on the bench. And the girl's talking to her friend, and her friend seems to be affected and sort of, like, stops and then commits suicide with her, like, hairpin thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's like a chopstick-looking thing.
Yeah, the other girl appears to have enough, like, what do you call it? Like, awareness, I guess, to realize that other people are acting weird, including her friend. I don't know if she then kills herself afterwards, right?
We don't see that. Yeah, she just, like, calmly watches her friend sit beside her and stab herself in the neck, and she's just like, I'm not going to get up from this bench, you know? I'm just going to keep just looking at these people kill themselves and watch my friend stab herself in the neck, and it's just not going to faze me whatsoever. So, like, maybe the neurotoxin affects different people different ways?
Yeah, at least at different rates. But it does make it seem like at least some people are immune, even though I don't think that's meant to be the case.
I don't think it's meant to be the case either, but it begs the question, like, throughout the movie, they are just really efficient at getting information out there, right? Because this movie, 95% of this movie takes place over the course of 24 hours. And really, it's like 12 hours. So just like they start in the morning, they leave school mid-morning, and then by like 6 p.m., we're 90% of the way through the movie, pretty much.
Right, yeah.
So that's all it is. But it's just like, who's videotaping the events that are happening and uploading them to YouTube? Who's out there that is surviving this? Because I think the toxin just affects everyone, and, you know, are the only people that aren't affected the ones that are just doing all the uploading, doing all the news reporting, all the diagnosing?
Yeah, because at one point we do see, like, at a few points, we see people on the news discussing this. And, like, it takes a few people to make news. And it seems like they wouldn't be able to just operate. Like, they even have guests that they've called in. So, yeah. I guess it's only in the Northeast, they said. So maybe those people are, like, you know, in a different place.
Yeah, not sure. So then the next scene is also in New York City. And I think the screen said it was, like, three blocks away from Central Park. We have some construction workers making some dick jokes, whatever. And then all of a sudden, like, a worker falls off a building. And they're like, oh no, Davis fell off. And they go over and like call the medic over. And then like 5 seconds later, they hear another thunk. And they look at somebody else and they're like, oh shit, Steve just fell off too. And then they just like pan up. And it's workers in construction hats just like sort of, I don't know, swan diving off the 10-story building to their death.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, like, mass suicides taking place. Although, sometimes it appears they do homicides?
Yeah, in the vehicle, you mean?
Yeah. Although, I guess maybe that guy was just trying to kill himself?
Yeah, I think he was trying to kill himself. But, I mean, not that there isn't homicide in this movie, either, because there is. I don't think that's the neurotoxin causing the homicide, though.
That's, yeah, a different thing, I guess.
Yeah. Might be too much Fox News.
So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on. But yeah, so we have Mark Wahlberg playing the teacher Elliot, right?
Yes.
And, like, when introduced to him, he's in his class. And he's, like, asking his students to solve the disappearing bee crisis.
Yep.
He's just asking them to, like, brainstorm ideas about it, which they seem to have no idea about. Like, why would they? It doesn't seem like this was part of a unit so much as he was just like, guys, we need to figure out something. This is a big deal.
That being said, it's like a really engaged class for the most part. So I think they this guy.
Yeah, I mean, I used to have a teacher in, like, in my, like, high school calculus class who would just, like, not really teach us, like, calculus or, like, any kind of syllabus so much as he would just sort of, like, riff on interesting problems. And it was, like, an interesting class that we all sort of, like, enjoyed. And it seems like maybe this is a similar thing. Like, I'm not sure if we learned all the stuff we were supposed to learn.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, fun. Because it was just, like, it seemed very low stakes because you were just, like, talking about stuff, you know, so there was no, like, pressure.
Yeah, that sounds, I mean, similar. But, I mean, he is teaching them at least, like, because whenever they're walking out of the classroom after school is dismissed in the wake of these supposed terrorist attacks, he's like, remember the scientific process, you know, come up with this shit, then do that, then go to the next thing, and then interpret your data, which is only said so that it can set up his process later.
Yeah, and his process later doesn't matter, right?
It doesn't fucking matter. It's literally just like, if you just think, oh, let me put my head together, let me just fucking think about this. Okay, maybe that's what happened. There's a lot of that going on in this movie. Like,
but also, them figuring out what happened barely matters.
That's correct. Yeah.
Because, like, they figure out really late, past the point when it would have mattered. And then also, even when it could matter, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And M. Night Shyamalan always gets, like, criticism for his dialogue. And that criticism is, like, fair.
Oh, it's 100% valid in this one.
But also, he loves to do just, like, exposition that's just telling you what's happening in the movie for some reason. Like, he had the weird, like, plant nursery people, right? So, yep. Like, okay, so let's just move it. So they all flee. It's him, his coworker Julian, who is John Leguizamo's, who's the math teacher. And he is, he likes to talk about numbers for some reason. He says numbers calms people down. That's like his character quirk. It's not well done, and it doesn't matter.
Yes.
Like, it's not like he has interesting mathematical facts or like relevant ones or like it's a thing that works really.
Nope, it's literally just content that can be recorded on a screen and it matters. None of it matters.
Yeah, and he's, I thought he was in this more because I knew he was like the third guy in this, but he's not, also not in it very much.
Yeah, I think 30 minutes in, he's gone.
And so they all decide to flee on a train. His wife is somewhere else, but he has a daughter. And Mark Wahlberg's wife is Alma, played by Zooey Deschanel, who they're like on the outs, and she's maybe having an affair with Joey, who is played by M. Night Shyamalan in a voice-only role.
Yep.
And apparently Joey has misassessed their relationship because they only went out for, it was like tiramisu, maybe?
Yes.
And he, I don't know, is taking that, so he keeps calling.
Well, he keeps calling, and she thinks it's because he, like, thought it was more than tiramisu. He's looking to take the relationship to the next level.
Yeah.
But then I think when she finally answers on the train, he's just like, I've been trying to reach you because shit's hitting the fan, and I just wanted you to be safe. And he was like, he's basically explaining what he knows about the neurotoxin at that point.
It's weird. I feel like when you're fleeing, like, why would you answer your affair partner's phone calls at all at that point?
To move the movie along.
Yeah, like, I get why, but, like, wouldn't you just be like, you know what? This isn't, like, what are you going to do? You're going to, like, go, like, I don't know. It seems like I'd be committed to, you know, if I'm fleeing with my husband at this point, I feel like I don't want to create any conflict. You know, but she keeps wanting to, like, discuss them. Like, she keeps being weird as they're fleeing this terrorist attack, too. they think it's a terrorist attack early on.
Yep.
Because, yeah, basically there's a bunch of mass suicides starting in the cities. New York, and then I think Philadelphia is the next one we see, which is where they are.
Yep. And I think it's a terrorist attack. Boston shortly thereafter.
So they all get on a train. I feel like if I thought people were being terrorist attacked, I wouldn't get on mass transit. Right?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, maybe they just don't have cars because they live in Philly and they walk everywhere.
Why not just, like, stay in your house?
Yeah, don't go to the parks. Because the first two were in parks, weren't they?
Yeah. Yep. I would just sit in my house like we did, like, during COVID. You know? Yeah. It wasn't like in COVID we all got on a train and went somewhere else. Because, like, oh, there's COVID in the Northeast. Let's go somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
That'd be insane.
Well, that's because then you'd be taking that disease elsewhere. Yeah.
And also, you'll be together. Like, you'll be with a bunch of people. You want to be with as few people as possible. It turns out that's actually true in this, but it doesn't matter. So, yeah. Zooey Deschanel throughout this whole movie is just being, like, awkward about their, like, they're having marital problems. But she can't just, like, suck it up for the day and, like, sit on the train. She's like, we probably won't be able to sit next to each other on the train. It's like, based on what, though? Like, you probably can. There's probably two seats next to each other, or four seats. Like, because it's the four of them. It's the daughter, John Leguizamo, and her. And but, yeah, she's very strange throughout this whole movie. And then, what's the guy, Julian, is like, oh, I saw her crying on your wedding day. She wasn't ready to get married. It's like, what are we talking about here? Like, why are we going back, like, before this? And it seems like they've talked about this before. It's like, this is not the time to have, like, I don't know, to be trying to, like, sort out your friend's marriage. It's just like, we have other things going on. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I wonder what the movie would have been without that, because there's a lot of that happening. And all of the conversations, all this unnecessary dialogue, is written by somebody who's clearly never had a conversation with a human being. And it's just, like, totally unnecessary, doesn't help the plot whatsoever, and it's painful.
Well, and the other weird thing about this movie, in addition to the dialogue being weird, is that the cinematography is all just, like, extreme close-ups on people as they're talking. It's so close that it cuts off part of their, like, head.
Yeah, I was going to say the same. You can't see Mark Wahlberg's chin.
Yeah, it's like, you can only see from, like, his hairline to his, like, lower lip. It's the strangest. And it's, like, extended cuts of, or, like, extended shots of just him, like, giving these, like, goofy speeches. Like, in extreme close-up, for some reason. It's all very weird. Like, Zooey Deschanel is... she's almost playing, like, her character from 500 Days of Summer. Who is, like, that... who, like, doesn't want to be in the relationship and is, like, sort of evasive. But he or she's married. And she's still doing that. Even the tiramisu thing, I don't know if that's just who Zooey Deschanel is as an actor, but, like, I don't know. This could have been straight out of The New Girl, too, is her talking about, like, you know, me and Joey went out for tiramisu, I wanted to tell you, like, it's like, what are we talking about, guys? This is the goofiest thing. It's like, in this movie, like, I think people weren't sure what the tone was supposed to be. He describes it as, like, a B-movie. I don't know if it's, like, funny enough to be a comedy, you know, like, I don't know if it takes itself seriously, but it doesn't sort of use that lack of seriousness to deliver anything, really, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it is laughable at times, painful most of the time, but it, she's rough. It's not like she wasn't a successful actress at this point, right? Because she was, like, in Elf. This isn't her debut.
No, I mean, working with M. Night Shyamalan it's not like she, like, was forced into it. I mean, this is presumably something she wanted to do. Mark Wahlberg, too, was, I think, pretty famous. Yeah, I mean, I guess 500 Days of Summer is after this. And so is Yes Man and a few other things. But yeah, Elf was before this. And she's in a bunch of movies, so.
Yeah.
And I don't know when The New Girl started, but obviously that was hugely successful. That was 2011, so that would have been after this.
So they're in the train station, right? Do we know why John Leguizamo is carrying his 11-year-old daughter like she's a 3-year-old?
Is she 11? Yeah, I wasn't sure. She doesn't, like, talk in this movie either.
I mean, she talks early on and then at the very end. But yeah, whenever shit hits the fan and she gets uncomfortable without her mother, then she just clams up.
Yeah, I think at some point I wrote down the daughter could just be a suitcase. yeah, she's just nothing.
Well, in hindsight, looking back, like she, I think, was supposed to be a 3-year-old. But then maybe she had some somewhat important dialogue later on. Or maybe they had some casting difficulties where they were like, we can't get the right 3-year-old to deliver these lines. So we'll just open it up to family friends and get this 11-year-old. And we'll have it be an 11-year-old character. But John, you got to carry her the whole time to sort of like, you know, convey closeness between you and your daughter.
Yeah, it was almost like they said, you know, he's going to need to carry her in these scenes.
Yeah.
They meant acting wise and he thought physically. So he just picked her up.
I mean, there's multiple occasions, and this is a 24-hour period where they're like batting down doors trying to get this daughter food. And it's like, she's 11. She can just, like, you know, skip breakfast or something, or maybe skip lunch. She hasn't eaten in 4 hours, and you guys are pretending like she hasn't eaten in a week, and she's going to die if she doesn't eat in the next hour. It's just like, what is happening here? You're treating her as if she should have been an infant this whole time. In the back of the car, she's napping at some point, and I feel like that's real infant behavior. So I think it was just supposed to be a fucking 18-month-old baby.
She keeps getting younger in US to me.
Because it just doesn't make sense. It's like, what the fuck? Yeah, I think it was supposed to be a 2-year-old.
Yeah, I mean, I'd believe it. It's she was not given much to do, and she didn't do much acting after this. That girl. So maybe your heart. I think this was her last role. It looks like. Yeah. So maybe your heart wasn't in it. you know, she's not the worst actor in this, though. So
that's true.
It's a tie with everyone else. although they weren't given great dialogue. So yeah, they meet a bunch of weirdos as they're going along. I guess. They go to, like, a diner at some point, right?
Well, do we want to talk about why the train stopped? Because they're on the train, it's going.
I don't know why the train stopped.
And they stop in Filbert, Pennsylvania, bumfuck nowhere. I don't even know if this is a real place. But I think it's, like, Mideast PA. And yeah, like all the conductors and train personnel congregate outside of the train. They say nothing to any other passenger who there's like 200 people standing outside the train. And Mark Wahlberg just sort of like nonchalantly walks up and he's like, hey guys, you want to sort of explain what's happening? And they're like, we lost contact. And he's like, with whom? And they say, everyone. And it's just like, do you really need minute-by-minute instruction from fucking headquarters to know that you're on a goddamn train ride from point A to point B? Just, like, do your fucking job. Keep going. It doesn't matter that you lost contact with everyone. And is your fucking train station or train service limited to the Northeast? Like, is there nobody outside of the Northeast that hasn't stepped outdoors? Because if they're still inside, presumably they can still communicate with them.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why they all stopped. I guess they can't. They're worried about crashing or something. But they do just sort of let their passengers just wander around in the middle of nowhere without much instruction.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of them end up in this local diner, which is just going about their business as if there's not terrorist attacks happening. Like at this time. You know, a plane flies into the World Trade Center. It's like school's canceled. Everyone stays home. All flights are canceled. Fucking stay indoors. Hunker down. But instead, this diner's just like thriving. They're like, look at all this business we're getting. We're slammed. This is great.
And they're all like listening to, what are they listening to, a radio or something? Because a report comes in and is like, it's not affecting 90 miles west of here. And everyone just bolts for various, because most of these people came on the train, you'd imagine, right?
That's what I thought. I don't know how they all managed to get in cars.
But then everyone except Mark Wahlberg and Damien Chazelle get into a car and go off. John Boyega's almost decides to go back to Princeton to find his wife. I don't know. Again, I'm not married. I don't have kids. But I feel like you wouldn't leave your daughter with some other people to go find your, like, adult wife.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Like, I think your wife, if you got there and she were alive, she'd be like, where's our child? And you'd be like, oh, I left her with some other people. they were going west. Hopefully we can find them west of here. Well, you know?
Does this neurotoxin affect satellites? Like, what's happening? Would cell phones really be down?
No, I guess cell phones, because Joey keeps calling, right?
Yeah, Joey keeps calling. Like, I don't know. It ebbs and flows, like, whether or not the cell phones are working at any given point in this movie. Some scenes they do, some they don't.
It's not even like a thing you can save people from. It's not like a zombie thing or something. Well, like him going to help her could help. So it's like either you're going somewhere where she's safe, and then you're like, oh, I just sent my daughter somewhere else. Hopefully she's also safe. Or you're going somewhere that, again, is infected with the toxin and you're just going to die. Right?
Yep. Yeah.
That's turns out it's the second one. Turns out the second
it
one.
Is the second one. Yeah.
That he just, him and his whole car just die.
Wow.
And that's the thing. This movie has a lot of, like, pretty gruesome deaths.
Yeah.
Like, it's like not. And have you ever seen, like, Final Destination? They're almost, like, comical Goldberg stuff.
Yes.
This is more just, like, kind of disturbing. I remember seeing the trailer for this a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it did seem kind of disturbing.
Well, I mean, so, specifically, I think it's the guy laying down in front of the lawnmower.
Yeah, like the giant, like, thresher sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
And you actually see him get, like, chopped up, sort of.
Yeah, he gets halfway under it.
But even, like, eventually you see people have, like, hung themselves with, like, a garden hose or something. Or, like, there's a bunch of, like, workers that look like they've hung themselves.
Oh, yeah, the landscapers hanging from the trees.
Yeah. And I don't know, there's, like, small children that die. Like, I don't know, a lot of this doesn't seem like it's, I don't know, like, if you watch, like, Final Destination, that sort of, like, horror, like, comedy seems a lot more comedic. I don't know if that's, I mean, that seems like it's meant to be comedic, because it's, like, so goofy. Whereas this just seems, like, kind of gruesome in a way that I don't think he, like, gets off the hook with just, like, this is kind of a weird movie. So.
No, I mean, at this point, the cop walking near Central Park just sort of, like, shot himself. Then the taxi driver who was talking to the cop 30 seconds before gets out, picks up the gun, shoots himself, and then some pedestrian that's on the street walks over, picks up the gun, and shoots herself. So it's just like, this gun has killed 3 people consecutively. You know, people just look for the most efficient way to die. The one guy in the zoo, he just goes into the lion's den and starts offering up his arms to the lions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's something.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting. So, like, at some point, I think they're riding along with, like, a guy who runs a nursery.
Yes, the hot dog, like, enthusiasts.
Yeah, and he basically just tells them the plot of the movie.
Yeah, for sure.
He's like, oh, the plants are fighting back, and they're doing a neurotoxin like they do with insects. But to humans, and it's killing everybody, or it causes people to kill themselves.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, that's weird. That's crazy. I guess knowing the plot of the movie, you're like, no, yeah, that's exactly what happened. Yeah. But everyone else is like, no, that's stupid. It's terrorism. Even though, like, the terrorism thing makes less and less sense. they're like, oh, there's 45, like, because you see the dots on the map, and there's like 150 of them.
Yes.
So it's like, there were 150 coordinated terrorist attacks going in, like, order of, like, small, like, biggest to smallest in terms of the towns, but only in the northeast, like, I don't know, it's just like, stories for holes. It's sort of weird that, like, the first attack wasn't at, like, a logging camp or something. You know? Somewhere where they're, like, actually hurting. It's in Central Park, which I think is, like, you know, I don't think they're doing, like, a lot of logging there. It's, like, it seems like they're, like, maintaining a lot of the wildlife there.
Yeah. You know? I mean, wouldn't plants fight back? Maybe in the hills, whenever they're chopping trees down, that's where the plants decide to strike. But no, it's a coordinated attack for the most populated areas. You know, they're going for numbers first.
Yeah, and then so over the course of the movie, eventually they sort of realize this is what's happening, and they break into smaller and smaller groups. For some reason, Elliot's like the leader of the group of say like 30, because they're all driving along. And they're trying to flee. And they go to, like, this four-way stop. And they run into Jeremy Strong. Is it Jeremy Strong?
Yeah.
Who's playing private whatever.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, can't go this way. But there are two other directions. And then you see people fleeing from two other directions. And they all sort of meet up and is like, okay, none of these places are safe, clearly. Let's wander around these fields. Okay?
Yeah.
And then the big group, like, views Elliot as a leader, and then they break into, like, different groups with him, his wife, the girl, and these two random boys?
Yeah, we're not sure where they're from.
Yeah, just random boys. Why are they not with their parents? And, I mean, maybe their parents also left to find their spouses in Providence?
I guess so.
And then, like, everyone else is in the other group. And at some point, they just hear the other group dying. I forget, what does it have? Is it gunshots?
Oh, yeah, they're just walking through the field, and they hear gunshots just in succession. I mean, I think we hear 10. But, yeah, and then they're just like, okay, let me interpolate this. Let me go through my scientific process and figure out what the difference is. Oh, they had more people. Okay, let's split up into smaller and smaller groups.
Yeah, because I guess at this point they're with a bunch of other people, and then they split into that group of five, I guess.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't know. It never occurs to them to be like, hey, let's leave these two fucking kids, and we'll go, like, the three of us, or just, like, everyone for themselves, and, like, one of us sticks with the kid.
No, in fact, like, 20 minutes after they meet these kids, they're, like, really heartbroken at the kids' deaths.
Yeah, because the kids die in this, like, insane scene where they stumble upon a house of people who are barricaded in their house, which really seems like the most reasonable people in this movie.
Yeah.
And one of the boys, I don't know, there's a black kid and a white kid. The white kid starts, like, kicking the door down because the people won't let them in.
Yeah, and he needs food for this 11-year-old daughter, you know?
And then the people open the door and just shotgun him in the chest. And then, as the, like, black kid's just sort of standing there looking at his friend...
Who's done nothing, like, by the way. The black kid didn't...
Yeah, he's just standing there. They, like, slowly... You see this, like, the barrel of a gun slowly creep out of the window, and they just blast him in the head. And I think... It's like the most, it's the most insane scene in this movie.
If they were willing to shoot the black kid for doing nothing, why weren't they also willing to shoot Mark Wahlberg and Alma and Jess? Instead, they just, like, calmly after that said, you best get off my porch now.
Yeah, like, they killed the second kid. Like, the first kid was kicking their door. And again, this is a child. Like, I don't know how old the kid is, like, at this movie. He's described as a teenager, but he looked really young. Like, they all looked pretty young.
Yeah, I mean, they might be 15, right?
Yeah, I think they are 15. Like, that's the age of the kids when they were playing this. I would, like, but, like, it's not like these are grown. Like, I don't know, you have some kids who are, like, grown men, you know, who might be dangerous. This is like a little chubby kid who's just like, let me into the house. Come on. We need food. You know? And then, yeah, just gets blasted. And then, yeah, the other kid, I don't know, what was it? Josh and Jared. I think Jared's the black kid.
Yeah.
Jared was just standing there. And just like, you see this gun slowly creep out the window and just blast him for no reason. Like, strangest thing I've ever seen. Yeah, and then it's like, I guess because eventually, like, you knew they weren't going to end up with those two kids forever. It's really weird that that's how, like, the movie gets rid of these two kids. You know?
Yeah, that's wild. So, yeah, at that point, they're just like, okay, we just need to stay ahead of the wind. We need to keep going and run out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, they do at some point say they need to outrun the wind. Is that, like, a thing you can do?
I don't think so. I think the wind is everywhere. It just depends on what parts of the earth are hot and what's cold, you know?
Yeah, I don't exactly know how wind works, so I'm not going to pretend to do that here. But, like, they're treating wind like it has, like, a starting point and an ending point.
Yes. Like, it's not... like it's a fire that started in the corner of one field, and it's just slowly moving across toward you.
Yeah, they're running through a field of plants. Like, of, like, grass and, like... It's not like they're running on, like, a paved road or something. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it could originate from in front of them.
Yes.
You know, it seems like at some point it's just the people are driving when John Leguizamo's group gets killed. Like, they're in a Jeep and the Jeep just has like a tear in the roof. So it's like, I mean, it's not like the stuff is, I guess they're like, they drove into a town that's infected. But again, like the infection stuff is like, I don't know, it just happened or it doesn't happen. And then they end up at some, like, old lady's house.
Yeah, Mrs. Jones.
Who is just, like, a very strange lady.
Well...
who just, like, invites them in.
It was weird, because her character, I think, was supposed to be insanely strange. But given everything that had happened up until that point, it didn't come off like she was really weird. It was just like, oh, more of the same. Okay. Maybe just a different flavor.
Yeah, because the people who just blasted these small children were maybe, like, the most unhinged people in the movie.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know if you've alluded to it a couple times, but, like, the nursery guy has, like, this weird little speech about, like, you know, hot dogs are underrated. Like, they're full of protein, and they come in a little tube, and they're easy to cook, and you're just like, what the hell is happening here? Like, you're like, is this part of the disease? Like, you just talk about stupid nonsense? But it's like, no, that guy was just a weirdo.
It's interspersed with serious stuff, too. He's, like, occasionally explaining, I think it's the plants. They can release chemicals. Do you like hot dogs?
Plants, he's like, plants can talk to each other, and different species can do this, and they can summon whatever. And you're like, okay, that's all reasonable. And he's like, I don't even know what, like, I think they're in the nursery when he starts. It's not like they're at like a hot dog stand and he's like, I just love these hot dogs.
No,
it's
he's
like,
saying goodbye to the plants, and then he just looks up and he looks at his wife and says, did you bring the mustard?
Oh, yeah. And she holds up a cooler that's like, I'm presuming the cooler is just full of mustard.
Just full of hot dogs and mustard. He's just so excited.
Yeah. Do these people, I mean, I assume these people end up dead. Do we see them die?
We don't see them die, no.
Well, how did they get separated from Mark Wahlberg's group?
Because whenever at the crossroads, Private Oster's just like, you know, everyone, we need to stick together. Sticking together is great, so we should split up into two groups. One that's ready to go right the fuck now, and then another group who needs to grab something from their car real quick.
Oh yeah, he does say that. Which is the weirdest thing, because it's like, one that's ready to go now, and one that can leave in 30 seconds. It's like, and also, we need to be in two groups. Like, we need to be together.
It is paramount that we stick together, but also, we cannot wait 30 seconds for you.
And he's also like, okay, so, because he's an army guy or something.
Yeah.
And he's just like, okay, so the army, they tell us if you can't get out of the area of the attack, you hunker down in the area of the attack. So that's why they decide to stop fleeing west. And just wander around aimlessly, I guess. I don't know why they don't just, again, hunker down wherever, like any building would be fine.
Yeah.
You know, again, this appears to be happening outdoors. Or in like the park.
The forest. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so I don't think they ever like come upon a house and find a dead person in it.
I think that's true. Yeah.
Because eventually they go to like a model home or something. I think that's probably before this. But
yeah. No, because at that point it's the five of them. It's after the crossroads. Oh, you mean it's before Mrs. Jones?
Yeah, before Mrs. Jones.
Before, yeah, Mrs. Jones is the last sort of step in the yeah, fleeing.
That's the last place they end up. So yeah, they end up at her house. She invites them in for dinner, sort of. She's like mad the whole time, but invites them in for dinner. And then Mark Wahlberg like wanders around and finds a doll in the bed. And she gets mad and kills herself. And breaks all the windows.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Because at this point, the toxin is affecting smaller and smaller groups of people. And now it's literally just isolating single people.
Yeah.
So if the plants have the capacity to kill single people, why do they start out bothering with big groups of people? They should have just done it. Every single person should have been gone. But yeah, anyway, she gets affected by the toxin whenever she's sort of among her plants, comes back and sort of headbutts a couple windows and then dies. And then, we get the speaking through the tube scene, right?
Yeah. So what did Alma and Jess, were they just, they were in like the barn or something?
I think they woke up earlier than Mark Wahlberg. And they just, yeah, decided to go to the house, the outhouse or something, which has a speaking tube connected to it. And that's whenever the plants decided to attack again.
Yeah, so they're on opposite sides of the tube talking to each other. And then decide to, like, run, come together because, I don't know, they don't want to die separately. Because it'd be, like, more... I don't know, impactful, I guess, if it wasn't clear that it could kill them individually. You know?
Yeah.
But instead it's like, well, we're going to die anyways, we might as well be together. And then they don't die. Spoiler. The wind just decides not to kill them this time. And it's a little bit messed up that they're like, we want to be together, but also this young girl has to die too. You know, they're not like, Jess, you stay here, try to stay safe. We're going to go together. They're like, no, you're in on this. We're trying to rekindle our marriage, sort of. and you need to be part of this. So then they just survive. The movie just ends. It's sort of like War of the Worlds in that way, where it just ends.
Well, this attack is done, and we learn that apparently the attacks began at 8:33 a.m. and ended the next morning at 9:27 a.m. And it's just like, who was clocking this? Was it that girl in the park who just like looked at her watch whenever her friend stabbed herself in the neck? It's like, that's the first recorded incident, right?
Yeah, like who knows when the last ones are? You know, is like, are they calling in like, oh, Mrs. Jones killed herself at 9:22? And they're like, yep, that's the last one.
They're immediately able to diagnose this shit. And it's just the communication is unparalleled from a news perspective and like getting the message out there. But then also simultaneously, Private Oster can't get in touch with anybody back at base, presumably because they all flung themselves into the barbed wire fence.
Yeah, that's what he said. He said they were all wrapped in the barbed wire.
And then the train conductors can't contact HQ. So it's just like, complete polar opposite ends of the communication spectrum are in this movie.
Yeah. And then this is the second time where we have like a scientist on TV and he's like, it's like the red tide. It happens sometimes. It's another, like, I think I wrote this earlier when we first see the scientist. The scientist is on TV just making shit up.
Yeah.
It's like they invited a scientist. They're like, why don't you come randomly speculate about what's happening? And the guy's like, absolutely. Yeah, sure thing. That's what we do here. You know? It's just like, the guy's just saying stuff. He's like, yep, bunch of people died. We haven't been able to communicate with any of them in a day. So now we're just going to say stuff. You know, we're just going to say it's like, and then we see there's it's sort of weird because there's we see Elliot and Alma have adopted Jess, who is just dealing with this really well because everyone's died. She didn't talk in the beginning. It was like she was a talkative kid and then quieted down. And then it turns out Alma's pregnant.
Yeah.
So they have a replacement kid for this kid. And then we see some French people, and it seems like they're going to do some mass suicide too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
So.
Because that scientist was doing some speculation. He said this is the first of many. You know, this is sort of a warning. And then 3 months later, it happens in France.
The thing about this is, it's like not clear what you could do to prevent this.
It's not like, I mean, it's you not just like need to save yourself from yourself, right?
Sure, but I mean, it's not like the plants have demands.
Other than, you know, you killing yourself. So, yeah.
Well, but so them having being like, this is a warning or something, doesn't, it's like either they want to kill all the humans or they don't. I mean, I think the response to this would be, let's burn all the plants down. You know, like, wouldn't that be the thing people do?
Yeah, I mean, because at some point in the movie, Zooey Deschanel's like, what kind of tree is this? And he's like, I think it's a maple. So it's just like, maybe there's a species of plant that they're just like, we need to take down every fucking hickory tree from here to Canada. That's going to protect us.
I feel like people would just be like retaliating against plants at this point. You know? Sort of like, I mean, this is sort of like a post 9/11 movie. So like, instead of just like Islamophobia, it would literally just be people would be like burning down plants, like attacking random trees with axes.
Replacing their yard with gravel.
Yeah, you know? Like paving random things of grass.
Yeah.
You know?
Just stocking like, up on herbicide.
Yeah, just like everyone walks around with like a tank full of Roundup. Yeah. You know, or just anything green they see, they just start letting loose. Yeah, I don't know. It just doesn't make a ton of sense. Like, again, it would have made a little more sense if it was like people doing stuff that hurts the earth, not like any random person walking around, you know?
Yeah.
And I also like how they talk about like the progression of the disease at some point. They're like,
they have it down pat. They're like, yeah, it starts with whatever, confusion, slurred speech, and then, you know, you just sort of are paralyzed and then you kill yourself.
Yeah, but these happen over the course of 12 seconds. So it's like someone observed this, but it also, it's not even like if you see your friend slurring their speech, you can like save them by getting them away from the grass or something, getting them onto concrete.
I mean, maybe you could put them in a chokehold or like a headlock, or you could hobble them. Of course, you could hobble them and then they can't kill themselves.
You're also going to be affected by this, obviously.
I don't know. Maybe, not everyone. The girl in the park wasn't. Maybe you have time to save your friend and then... does the neurotoxin last forever, you know?
It's not clear. I mean, does it just go away? Because, like, if you put something in the air, it's like, when it stops being pumped into the air, it's not like it disappears, right?
Yeah, maybe it becomes inert after 20 seconds. It's like, they can literally choose when to, when they feel a good breeze coming and they're like, oh, I could definitely attack that person over there. They squeeze it out, right? And then they put a bunch of toxin in the air and hopefully the wind takes it over and kills them. Sort of. They're just
those particular people.
Getting the assist.
It would have been interesting if we saw people who, like, I don't know, some kind of hippies not being affected. And it was just like, okay, like, they like some of the people. But it was like, no, everyone dies. You know, it doesn't matter what you were doing. It doesn't matter where you are, really. Eventually, you can just get even groups of one. So there's nothing you can do. It literally is a movie just about them, like, fleeing and then realizing it doesn't matter. It's not like they can interact with the cause of the death. So it's like really one of those movies where like nothing happens. There's no conceivable way to stop it. You know, they don't plan on it. It's sort of like, I mean, in Day After Tomorrow, they run away from the cold, which at least is a little more like visual. There's like these ominous shots of like plants sort of blowing around. It's like, oh no, it's getting closer. It's like, is it getting like, you know, the wind can shift. It could go the other way. Like, that's not how any of this works. And at some point he literally does say, we just need to, I wrote this down, a couple of quotes. What does he say? Let's just stay ahead of the wind. And then at some point when the wind is catching them, they're just like, buckle, like, they like hunker down and just say, here it comes. Like, what do you, it's all you can like brace yourself for the neurotox, it doesn't matter. I don't know. They have, oh, and at some point they're like, because the, even before we see it stop, there's a professor on TV just saying, like speculating, and he has this graph that just shows it going up.
Yeah, exponentially. And
he's like, we have reason to believe it will fall off tomorrow. It's like, based on what though? Like, your grass doesn't have a downward slope at all. Like, it's not like it started coming back down. He's just like, it will probably stop soon. This is the top of my graph. It's like, so far. It's like, your graph is just going up. You know, this could just kill all of us. Yeah, so, this is wild. Really weird movie. Sort of earns its reputation. I think if you haven't seen this movie, you'd think it's stupid because of its premise. But it's actually stupid because of its execution. You know?
I think it's both.
I mean, The Day After Tomorrow is like a real movie.
Is that the one with Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah. It has like a similar premise of like the cold is coming to get them. And they literally outrun the cold at some point and shut the door on it. And like, that's all goofy, but it's like a movie.
Yeah.
This is just like every decision is so weird.
Every decision is weird. I mean, every component to this movie is terrible. All of the subplots don't matter. I don't care about any of them. Like the relationship between Elliot and Alma, don't care. The relationship between John Leguizamo and his wife, don't care. Like, you know, any death didn't matter. Just like, I don't care about any of it. And the timing of the movie is poorly done. Like, you're set up to even bother caring about John Leguizamo 25 minutes in, and he's like, I'm gonna go back and get Yvette, and the scene is set up to be this like, you're supposed to give a shit about John at this point, and it's like, no, I don't give a fuck about this guy. This is like Elliot's friend. The main character is Mark Wahlberg here. If Mark Wahlberg needed to make a decision, like, this decision would need to be made at the hour mark, and it needs to be like the setup for the climax of the movie. But instead, this scene takes place 25 minutes in about a character you don't give a fuck about. And it's just, like, poorly done.
Yeah, his only thing is, like, talking in weird math. You would think that, like, you'd care about his relationship with his daughter, but he just hands her off and doesn't give a shit. Like, it's really whatever.
Yeah. All the extras in this movie, it's just, like, he wrote the script, and he's like, well, here's what I need to have happen. And they're like, well, we can't just have that. We need a whole bunch of people to make the scene look good. And it's like, but then the context of the conversation doesn't make sense with all of these fucking people around. Whenever the train stops and the conductors congregate outside and you have 200 people, why is Mark Wahlberg the only one that gets to have the information? You wouldn't make a fucking announcement to say over the intercom system to be like, hey, this train is stopping because we lost contact. We're going to hope to get back on the road here in the next 30 minutes, or this will be the final stop. We're never going to there's got to be some method of communication that's more than just us one-on-one-ing with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, just because he came over and asked. Like, he's the only one who asked.
That, and like, whenever the vice principal or whatever comes into the classroom and says, I need to talk to you for a minute, it's like Mark Wahlberg then goes into an auditorium where all of the other teachers have already congregated. Is the intercom system broken in Mark Wahlberg's classroom? It's like, there's a fucking, just calling all teachers, need to go to the auditorium pronto, leave your kids behind.
Also, yeah, that's the thing. Do the kids just get left behind? For like, it's like, kids, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
There's a 9/11 happening. This is a point where cell phones exist. I don't know if they're like common for kids to carry at school, but you would think at some point, like, kids would be getting called. Like, this happened today. Kids would be getting called or see on the internet, like, oh, there's crazy stuff happening. Everyone would be freaking out. You definitely wouldn't leave the kids alone, but they're just like, yep, leave your classrooms unattended. We're going to go talk about the terrorist attacks.
Yeah, unreal.
So, the weirdest thing about this movie is it made $160 million on like a $50 million budget.
That's crazy to me.
Because this is like a movie that people joke about. This was actually apparently a successful movie.
I mean, after having watched it, I'm surprised about its IMDb rating.
What was its IMDb?
5?
You think that's high?
I think that's way too generously high. I think it needs to be down in like the 3 range.
Yeah, I just, like you said, early on the music is like weird. The acting is baffling. Like, Mark Wahlberg, people have made fun of him being cast as a science teacher. But like, I don't know, you could imagine he was, I don't know, a weird science teacher. But Zooey Deschanel is also being weird. Like, she doesn't seem like a person who's married to him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because she's being kind of like, I don't know, weird about it. Like, you know, like, she's not sure what their relationship is. Like, they haven't defined their relationship yet. You know? through, like, a marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, just all very
well,
strange.
She got tiramisu with Joey, right? And then later on, Mark Wahlberg expresses his forgiveness by telling her a story that he was, like, in a drugstore at some point. And he went over to the hot-looking pharmacist and said, can I get some cough syrup? And this was supposed to, like, forgive her because he's basically saying it's not a big deal that she went out with Joey and got tiramisu. And it's just like, those aren't the same thing. Those aren't even close. Like, you had an interaction with somebody that didn't need to happen, but your wife literally went on a date with a guy to get dessert. It's like, not in the same category. She definitely lied to you. And this is, you know, breach of contract.
It was also implied that he was lying about seeing the girl at the thing, right?
Oh, that it was just a joke?
That he was just saying that for her benefit?
Yeah.
Because I think she asked him, like, oh, you're lying, and he's just, like, kind of being weird about it.
I don't know. That forgiveness didn't make sense. How about the scene whenever it was the woman talking to her daughter on speakerphone at Princeton? And they're like, just sort of, you never see the daughter at Princeton, but they explain what she's doing in the middle of the crossroads. They're just like, oh, I hear the windows open. You should close the window. And did you close the window? Honey, I can't understand what you're saying. And then they just walk through all 3 phases of this illness, right, for all 12 seconds. And then you hear like glass shatter because I guess she jumped out the window. And then Mark Wahlberg gets the phone and he listens. He's like, I hear wind rustling. I think she jumped out the window. And it's just like, why did this need to happen? Why are all 40 people listening to this one speakerphone conversation? Is there no sense of privacy anymore? Who gives a fuck about your daughter in Princeton? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Just everything about it, just so strange.
What about whenever the realtor, they're like, oh, private officer's like, oh, I got a local realtor. He's going to tell us where that safe area is because we shouldn't be on the roads. And the realtor goes, you know, if we go west, we'll hit a county called Arundel. It's not on that map. It'll only be on local maps. And it's just like, this is a county. I'm pretty sure a county is going to be on some fucking maps. Like, counties only exist to be on maps. But like, yeah, fuck. Anything else in this movie?
Yeah, and like, a realtor isn't like a cartographer. Like, it's not like he's a navigator. He's just like, they do go to some model homes, which it would have been like he could have told them just like that. But it's weird that they're like, he's gonna tell us where to go. It's like, that's not what realtors do. Like, they don't, it's not like they're the only ones who know where houses are.
Well, why is there, like, a realtor out in the middle of fucking nowhere? It's like, don't you want to move to a big city? I understand they probably have realtors for every place, but like, that's lucky to find one. But then again, the McMansions that they're building, like this model home that's out in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, is enormous. Who the fuck is moving out there? There's no civilization to be heard of.
Yeah.
Where are you going to get your groceries? You're moving to a food desert.
Yeah, it's not clear. I mean, they have like people with random professions pop up for some reason, and it's just never helpful.
Yeah, I do love Mark Wahlberg is in a house, or he's in the model home, and he starts talking to the plant. Like, that happens at some point. And they kind of, like, they show the plant, and then as the viewer, you're like, is he about to start talking to this fucking plant? And then he actually starts talking to the goddamn plant. And from that point on, like, I don't know, they're on a tire swing. And he's like, I don't know if you'd be doing that. I don't know if you should be doing that. And Alma's response is like, oh, don't worry. I told her it's just a minute. And he's just like looking at this tree like, maybe we shouldn't piss this tree off because it's going to fuck us, yeah. You know?
Yeah, I'm like, oh, we don't want to antagonize the plant with the tire swing. Like, at that point, just like, yeah, this is so good. Because the plant is plastic, too.
Yeah.
Like, that's like the joke in that scene. So it's like, this is, yeah, at that point, the movie is just like very goofy. When he feels like the tree is threatening them, like it's like standing there menacingly, is how the like the tree with the tire swing is portrayed.
Yeah.
You know?
An aerial shot. And it's just like, oh man, they didn't even throw the rope over to make this tire swing. They literally drilled a hole into the tree. That's got to be bad news.
Yeah, he's gonna the tree's gonna be angry about this. Like, if there's any tree not to mess with, it's this big one with the tire swing.
This is a maple.
So yeah, I don't know, man. Like there was a lot of weird stuff that happened.
Did you have a favorite, like, death? Or, like, a most creative or laughable death?
Most laughable?
Yeah, like, method of dying. Because, obviously, most of them were tragic, but I think there were a few that you're just like, well, that's creative. Because I think he literally had a brainstorming session. He's like, how many different ways can people kill themselves? And it's like, you can stab yourself, yeah. You can shoot yourself, you can jump into a lion's den at the zoo, you can have a car accident, you know, you can slit your wrists.
The lion's den is, like, the goofiest. I mean, the funniest one, sort of, is the kid just getting blessed. Because, like, you see the gun just, like, slowly come out, and you're just like, what the hell is happening? Like, there's no way this kid just gets, and it's like, oh, no, he did. I think, like, the guy laying down in front of the thresher.
Yeah.
Which is, like, unmanned, right? He's just, like, hoping. It would have been funny if it just drove by him. But no, it gets him. I think the guy with the lions is funny because he, like, stands in the middle and just, like, walks to the lion. And then it sort of, like, cuts away or, like, someone walks in front. And then you see him with one arm missing. And then he just, like, shuffles to the other side and offers his other arm.
And it just sort of pops, like, off.
Yeah. Sort of like the Black Knight in Monty Python. Yeah. Wings just get ripped off. Like, I don't know if that's how lions even work, if they're just like, what, who knows? I mean, but I don't know anything about lions. I'm not gonna start speculating about lions, I guess. But yeah, that's pretty goofy. Yeah, I think those are the weirdest ones, because like, you're just like, what is happening? Like, this is so strange.
Yeah, I don't know. Didn't like the score, the dialogue, the casting, the acting.
It seems like at some point people sort of start, like, backtracking. Because I think it happens early on, and then when Jeremy Strong dies, he starts sort of, like, walking backwards and then kills himself, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is that, like, that seems to be part of it sometimes? Is, like, you'll start backpedaling?
That was stage 2.5, yeah. Physical disorientation.
Again. All happens, but like, it's particularly like them going backwards, like as if like they're just playing the tape in reverse type of thing.
They have to come to a complete stop, like they stop moving and they're sort of frozen solid for 6 seconds, And even if you're driving, you apply the brake and you come to a complete stop.
Yeah, and then he like accelerates.
And then he accelerates. It's not like you're paralyzed.
You mentioned the girl at the beginning. She was literally like asking her friend, like as if we're like sitting on a bench. She's like, "Hey, are those people clawing their face off?" And the friend just like doesn't say anything. And then her friend like takes out the thing, and like I guess does she stab herself with
it? Yeah,
yeah. She like slowly drives it through her neck. Right?
Yes. When all the other murders or suicides are like gruesome. And it just seems like if somebody's clawing their face off, this girl's not going to, like, slowly insert this thing into her neck. Like, she's going to violently start stabbing herself, right?
Yeah. But, like, she doesn't, I guess. But her friend just seems to be, like, sitting there. Like, her reaction seems quite muted to, like, this mass suicide thing. And also her friend killing herself a foot away from her, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So, I don't know. Yeah, I thought that was like, I mean, it was sort of set up like that was going to be the main girl or something. Because, like, we're starting with these characters, but well, I don't think we ever see her again. I thought I recognized that actress, too, which is why I was like, oh, is this.
I think I recognize that actress, too. I'm not sure what she's in, though. She wasn't credited here. Or maybe she was, but she was just too far down the list.
Yeah, I don't know if it was
order. I mean, literally, M. Night Shyamalan made it on, like, the 9th of the list, and he's just the voice of Joey on the phone.
I don't even know if do we hear the voice of Joey?
I don't remember hearing it. It's just like, you arrogant son of a bitch. You wrote, produced, and directed this son of a bitch movie. It's like, you had to also be credited as an actor above the girl who sat there looking at her friend kill herself. It's like, you piece of shit.
Because it's like, they're telling people what's happening. Okay. But like anytime there's a phone conversation, it's just like someone will come and like tell you what the call is about. It's like, oh, it's my mom. She's saying there's a lot of stuff going on in Boston. The people, anything with trees. It's not like you hear a conversation where it's like the mom's like, hey, I'm in Boston. It's like, no. My mom, like, you'll just hear one side. Is it like, I don't know. They didn't want to record. I don't know. It doesn't matter. So yeah, this was a nephew for me. I like sort of went in sort of, I had heard bad things about this movie because it was always a joke. And I had heard that people were sort of like revisited it and thought it was like, oh, well maybe it was like, you know, it was sort of supposed to be like a comedy. Like we misinterpreted it. Like it doesn't take itself seriously. I came away thinking like, no, it's not like funny. It doesn't seem to be like, of, you know, a take on something or like a spoof in that sort of interesting way. It's just sort of a poorly done movie.
Yeah.
I'm
not sure what elements of the movie I thought might have been done well. Other than like maybe the quality of the sound, like I could hear everything. I think visually none of it was dark. That was a positive. But outside of that, I think it failed in every regard. I mean, this movie was so bad, I think The Sixth Sense lost points on IMDb.
It's like when I saw Mickey 17, wanted to take away the guy's eyes. Like, sometimes you just like, no, I thought that last movie was smart, but now I've like reassessed you downward because like, I think I was giving you too much credit type of thing.
Yeah. So, definite nephew for me. I don't know how, like, what's the worst nephew that could happen? This might be one of, like, the top 3 to 5 worst movies I've ever seen.
No.
I fucking hated this movie. Really? And I watched it twice.
I don't think this is the worst movie I've seen this year. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't good, but, like, at least it was, like, stupid in a way that was, like, I don't know. It was something to talk about.
Yeah.
Some movies just painfully dull. But yes, it was pretty bad.
What a struggle. All right, well, is that all we got?
Yeah. I mean, unless you have the tidbit for the week.
I don't have a tidbit. Do you have a tidbit?
Did you say you had another thing?
Was it song?
No, you said I think you said it was another thing you were going to do.
Remind me what I said.
No, can't remember. I don't know. You didn't say what it was. You said, I have a different thing I'm going to do, and then didn't tell me what it was.
Sounds like me.
Sounds like you forgot. You sounds like you forgot about it, too.
Or I was just making up the fact that I had anything. I don't fucking know. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's all
we
got.
What can you do? Okay. What are we doing next? Are we maybe doing predestination? Actually, the next one will probably be Shakespeare in Love, right?
Yeah, Shakespeare in Love, maybe Predestination, maybe Sunshine.
Okay, we got a few coming up.
Alrighty. Fwe, 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 fwe.